podcast for Hudson Mohawk Magazine from the Sanctuary for Independent Media in Troy, New York. My name is Cassidy Faye McCabe. I use they, them, and she, her pronouns. And for today, we are highlighting the Spirit of the Suffragettes event series. For those who may not know, the Spirit of the Suffragettes showcases women, non-binary, and gender non-conforming musicians, occurring each Tuesday this summer in Freedom Square of North Troy, New York, at 101st Street where 5th and 6th Avenue meets. It is free entry, and performing this week are El Huri and Taina Asili. This evening is filled with free food, music, and activities from our lovely sponsors and tablers who are part of our community resource fair. For more information about the series, please visit mediasanctuary.org. In this week's special, we'll be highlighting interviews with our artists for the event. First up is an interview from the Sanctuary for Independent Media with the performers of O'Shun.
This is Petra Haller, and today I am speaking with Tondi and Nyambi of the hip-hop neo-soul duo O'Shun. How are you both doing today?
We're doing really good. I'm excited to be at the top of the new week, getting ready to hit the road again.
So for the last over a year now, you've been touring the world. Now you're touring through the United States again, and up into Canada, I see, as well, supporting yes. Bittersweet Volume 1. How has this experience been so far?
This experience has been, what I would say is, more than we could ever expect. We travel the world, and night after night, we get to see how our music and our movement impacts people. And it's very inspiring to see that we have a whole community of people that look like us, that don't look like us, that have our beliefs, that don't have our beliefs. And I think it's powerful for us both to just see how far our message can travel.
Now, you graduated 2 years ago from university. Have you found that you have more time now to dedicate to your music, or are you just as busy as ever?
Definitely just as busy, but we definitely have more time to tour, to make music. So, I mean, we don't have as much time to do other things because, you know, we're fully independent, partially self-managed, so it is a lot of hands-on time for us. But we definitely we're full-time artists, you know, so it's not like we're doing school during the day, I mean, or night classes and, you know, balancing between classwork and coursework and traveling for shows and things like that. So definitely more focused. Very much focused. I mean, as soon as we graduated, we started to kind of tour nonstop.
And are you going to be able to begin working on Bittersweet Volume 2 anytime soon? Is it already in the works?
Oh, yeah. We're currently whipping the pot as we speak.
Amazing. Is there an ETA on when that may come into the world?
No.
Okay.
We'll give you a lot of our information.
Okay.
But just know that there is a Volume 2 in the works, and there's some stuff before Volume 2 as well, some surprises that we have cooking up that will be available very soon.
Okay, awesome. We'll be in anticipation until then. Now, in your work, you reach back to your ancestors while also building this vision for tomorrow for future generations. What kind of ancestors do you aim to be for future generations?
That's a lovely question. Definitely aim to be powerful ancestors, praying that our spirit is just as strong, I mean, stronger really, after, you know, we leave this body than we are now, trying to make sure that we lead by example each and every day so that, you know, our legacy speaks for itself, that we are able to be beacons of love and light in real time right now, and then also as ancestors, you know, we hope to just be beacons of love and light, like I said, sweetness, joy, peace, healing in real time and, you know, forever. Yeah. I would add very quickly, too, that I think our descendants will look at us as ancestors who restored a certain level of culture for our lineages and a certain level of wealth for our lineages. I think they will look back at us and know that the way that they live has to do with the lifestyles that we set up for ourselves and for our children, our future children.
Now, could you touch on how love can be an act of resistance, how love can be a form of activism?
Yeah, well, love comes in many forms. I think one of the most revolutionary, disruptive forms of love is self-love, and it can ring as a cliche, but it's super true, you know, throughout the world. A lot of the powers that be that, you know, that control a lot of people, that oppress a lot of people, that a lot of people that are the hands that which people suffer. Yeah, you know, that colonize a lot of people. All of these powers that be, you know, they are so powerful because the first thing they have to do is convince us of our lack of power. The first thing they have to do is convince us of our unworthiness, of love, of respect, of power, of wealth, of all of these things. And so self-love is the beginning of restoring all of that westernization, colonization, and just evil throughout the world has disrupted. You know, loving yourself is the foundation of doing unto others the way that you want them to do unto you. Loving yourself is the foundation of having good character and you know, being able to be grounded and peace and joy and healing. So I think in that way, love is incredibly revolutionary because, you know, robbers don't break into empty homes. So the fact that we are so heavily controlled throughout the world means that something to love about us. Yeah.
Now, sunflowers feature prominently in the visuals for your music, such as in the music video for Parts, but also elsewhere. Now, what is their significance in the Osh universe?
Sunflowers are just a strong representation of sweetness, of light. I mean, even the fact that sunflowers, a lot of their purpose has to do with the sun, and it radiates a light. It grows toward the sun, and it grows toward light. And we just like to represent and embody light beings and light energy in everything that we do.
And in some variations of Yoruba culture where Oshun exists, sunflowers in some parts of that culture throughout the diaspora are used as an offering to her. But like Tandi said, one of the main qualities is the fact that if you see a sunflower, if you see a sunflower and the sun rises, the sunflower will follow the direction of the sun. Wherever the sun is facing, the sunflower will follow suit. So, you know, that light being, that the sun being the light, the source, like Tandi said, sweetness, like Tandi said, and always positioning ourselves as sunflowers, as the Sunflower Squad, as, you know, children of sweetness of Oshun, essentially, to always position ourselves towards lightness.
What can festival attendees expect at the show tomorrow?
Well, they can expect great music. They can expect to move their bodies. And above anything, they can expect to leave more in love with themselves, higher in energy, higher in vibration than when they came.
Definitely come hydrated, though, because everyone's going to have to work.
Now, before we say goodbye, is there anything else that you'd like to say?
Sure. Stream Bittersweet Volume 1 on your favorite digital platform.
Watch Blessings on Blessings on YouTube. And, you know, by the end of this week, we may or may not have, you know, another surprise out in the ether.
In the ethers.
Okay.
And make sure you follow us at Oshun, O-S-H-U-N, on Instagram.
And stay sweet.
Well, that's wonderful.
To yourself and to the world.
We really can't wait to see you perform tomorrow at the Spirit of the Suffragettes Festival. Tandi and Niambi, thank you so much for your time today.
No problem.
Thank you.
We'll see you tomorrow.
Okay, sounds good. Bye.
Bye.
That was Oshun, performers from last week's Spirit of the Suffragettes concert. Up next is an interview I did with Claire Promise, a local musician. She shares her musical inspirations and passions surrounding mental illness advocacy and women empowerment.
Hey, how are you?
I'm good.
Good. I am a musician. I'm a songwriter and a performer.
Cool.
Singer as well.
Is there anything happening right now that's related to your work?
Yes, actually, the big anticipation of my event on May 23rd at the Albany Barn in Albany, New York, 56 2nd Street. It's an event to actually bring people together to break free of the stigma and the labels of people with mental illness, addictions, any type of struggles that people go through, and how we all overcome them through the arts.
Is there anyone that inspires your work or introduced you to the work you do?
I've been performing since I was 6 years old. So I was in performing arts, musical theater. Actually, I just basically used to sit in front of like a speaker, and I was always so drawn to like MTV and stuff like that. I've always been, actually Madonna is a huge inspiration for me because they told her not to be this and not to be that, not to do things certain way. And she did it anyway, and she became legendary.
In what ways would you say our social rights movements have changed in relation to the suffragette movement?
I think it's changed tremendously. I think that women back then pretty much risked their lives to do what they do. I think that now people, it's more, you know, common for people to express themselves, whether they feel, have an opinion. Everyone's a very opinionated, you know, in 2018. Mm-hmm. But on the back end of that, the consequences have changed tremendously. Like back then, like I said, the women pretty much risked their lives to do what they do. And nowadays you go out and protest, nothing's really going to happen. So they paved the way. And I'm grateful for that.
And would you consider yourself an activist?
I've never really thought of myself as one or been called that. In terms of an activist, I like to just let the world know and hear me through my music, you know, just be heard in terms of empowering women, inspirational, you know, through my voice to let them know that they can be themselves and be creative no matter what any person, any man, anything tells them to be themselves.
Could you share with us some of the stories or issues you focus on in your music?
Yeah, actually, one of my songs called My Time, it actually starts out, it says, my mom always told me I'd never be a star. My friends always think I'm wasting my time. You know, those are just certain verses from my song. But I say, people get ready, it's my time. Basically saying like, I'm telling you, it's my time. And another song that I have is, they always told me that I wasn't fit for the game, like the music industry, you know, because a lot of people in the hip hop game say, oh, you're trying to steal that from us, racism wise. They told me that I didn't have what it takes, you know, a lot of men thought, oh, just be a groupie, just sit there and look pretty. We don't want you to sing on the mic, you know, mm-hmm. Don't do this, don't do that. And it took me a lot of years to soul search and find myself as a woman. And that's big on why I'm doing this event. Just to, you know, that it's who I am. So, you know, no matter how hard you stop me from being who I am, I might like let you do it for a minute, you know, and like try that because I don't know better. But like eventually I'm going to come into who I am. And I, you know, and that's where I'm at today.
Are there any inspirations specifically for the music you write?
Like I said, Madonna has because like a lot of all like on the Immaculate Collection, she does Holiday, Vogue, like, you know, Papa Don't Preach. They all sound different. They don't mm-hmm. all have like a, you know, the same like trap sound or it's all this one genre. They all have different sounds. And a lot of my songs, like some of them are dance and some of them are hip hop. And like, you know, and sometimes people be like, oh, I thought you did R&B. And I'm like, no, I just do good music. I don't really have a genre. So. Mm.
What kind of work do you do that you think could connect to the suffragette movement?
Definitely, you know, music, obviously. Mm-hmm. But right now I'm sort of stepping outside the box and putting together an event for the first time instead of like performing at an event. And everything that I've taken in over the years of doing over like 600, you know, like showcases and all over, I was never heard because I was a female. I never got to go on stage because like, you know, guys got on first. Or when I got on stage, people would, you know, guys would be like, oh, what's she doing up there? Like, I've dealt with that personally. Mm-hmm. I want everyone to be heard equally at this event. And I want everyone to know that we're all equal. Everyone gets a chance to shine. And you go on the time slot I give you, you know, everything's mm-hmm. organized. And it's just all love. It's nothing but love. Guy or girl, whatever you claim to be, you know.
Yeah. Thinking of how we look at the suffragette movement and the women who progressed that movement as major history makers, who would you nominate as a modern figure of our current social rights movements?
That's a good one. It probably sounds like cliche, but, you know, I would definitely do my mother. Because as years go on, I've like known to appreciate and also be aware of things that she does. You know, she goes to protests to stop special housing unit for the prison systems. She goes to, you know, rallies. She is an activist in the community. She's always putting up Facebook posts about, you know, Donald Trump and things that he's done or not doing, just to make people aware if they don't know. And she is like, she's not afraid to speak her mind. And, you know, I really, really admire her for that.
Thank you for your time, Claire.
Thank you.
That was Claire Promise with her music inspirations. For those of you just tuning in, you're listening to a special broadcast of the Hudson Mohawk Magazine on WOOC 105.3 FM Troy and WOOS 98.9 FM Schenectady. My name is Cassidy Faye McCabe, and today we're highlighting the spirit of the Suffragettes event series. Here is an interview with one of the performers from this week, El Huri.
I'm an immigrant to the U.S. I was born in Guayaquil, Ecuador. My mother is Lebanese. My father's from Spain. But they were raised in Ecuador in South America. So I came to New York in the U.S., New York City, when I was a baby girl. So I have the influence of being raised in the, you know, multicultural capital of the world, arguably the multicultural capital of the world, of New York City, but raised in a, you know, Spanish-speaking and culturally diverse, supportive home with a lot of influence of the Latino culture in me. But definitely I'm a New Yorker too, so I'm kind of a blend of that, and my music is a reflection of all that, both musically and lyrically as well.
So your new record is a straight-out reggae record. What other kinds of things have you recorded?
Well, my fourth record, this is my fourth solo record. I started out, you know, in the punk scene of the CBGB scene in New York. So those are my early days when I was in bands. But then when I became a solo artist, I pretty much was blending my different influences. So they're kind of musically world beat rhythms, Latin rhythms, reggae rhythms, and with rock and punk and funk. And that's kind of the El Huri sound. And that's what's evolved over the years. But I've always had a constant interest in reggae in all my albums. So my newest song was called Asiste, and my label said, hey, maybe we should put a collection of just your reggae songs over the years into one record, and that's what Asiste la Colección de Reggae del Huri is, this fourth album release of this year.
Are they re-recordings of the songs, or is it a compilation of previous recordings?
Some of them are new, some of them are just remixes, and others are the original. So it's I have a couple of three songs on the album that I did with Sly and Robbie, the Jamaican duo, geniuses that I admire, and they found me when I was doing my first solo record and wanted to collaborate, so I wrote a song with them, and ever since then I had a song on each album with them. So like the Sly and Robbie tracks on the record are how we originally recorded them, and then I had a couple of new ones and then a couple of remixes.
Great. And what's your perspective on the direction the music scene is going after all your years within it, from the punk rock days through everything else?
That's interesting. I guess I don't look at it so directionally. I've been expanding from being a local artist in my teens to an internationally touring artist, so it's a whole different perspective. Now I see that my sound is a fusion of a lot of different influences, and I think that is more common, too, because now, you know, if I hear a hip hop beat and I'm thinking a Latin groove, I might blend those in a song like I have done. So I think I don't know about the scene or, you know, the musical direction as much as my vision and my musical direction, you know. So I do navigate like between like the world beat world and kind of the Latin rock world because I love to play guitar. So I do see a lot of great. I play with other great bands in both those environments.
Yeah, it's interesting.
World, so.
I mean, there was a time in the 80s when Sly and Robbie were doing bass and drums on everybody's recordings, Black Uhuru, I mean, they're everywhere. And now the reggae scene has changed so much. It's the roots rock reggae that, you know, folks our age and maybe a little younger and a little older love isn't so predominant anymore, although maybe it's coming back. And so it's great to hear that you're you know, keeping the torch burning there.
Oh, good. Yeah. I mean, the roots rock reggae thing is totally what I love. But then I also have the, you know, my Latino influence. So it's, you could hear the Latin elements. I'm adding Latino core. So again, it's like the fusion thing. But I still have such respect for the roots of a lot of the traditional roots of a lot of what I encompass in my sound.
Yeah.
You know, I grew up listening to Afro-Cuban son more than salsa, even though I did hear salsa too, you know? So, you know, I love Afro-Cuban Cuban song and danzón and all the rumba and all that. And I like, definitely like roots reggae, and I definitely like, you know, rumba flamenco at its core, and, you know, the Ramones, like the Patti Smith, but then also all those influences that were, that riffed off that, you know, it's like music is a cool landscape.
Now you're an awesome guitar player, and even more significantly, you're known as an awesome guitar player. How did you get into being an instrumentalist?
Oh, I started as a pianist. My mother's a great composer and pianist, and so she wrote tangos, boleros, valses. So I started playing piano when I was 5. But I grew up in New York, so I was like, oh my God, I want to play like Eric Clapton, or I would see Neil Young, or on TV, or whatever, wherever I was seeing these bands as a kid, and The Clash, and Police. So I was attracted to guitar and rock, and once I found guitar, it was like I can write songs, I can sing songs with a guitar, write songs, and solo. So that's kind of how I fell in love with the guitar, and then never let go. And it's really nice to play an acoustic song beautifully, lightly, and then you know, crank a big Fender amp and put it on 11 and solo.
Now, when you hear the words Latin, rock, and guitar in one sentence, there's usually Santana in there also.
Oh, yeah.
Has that been a part of your trajectory?
He's as much in it. I admire him. I've been compared to him so many times because of that combination of rhythms with, and he's one of the people I admire, of course. Carlos, they call me Carlita sometimes, but I've also been compared to so many others at this point that I'm just grateful that I'm in the same, you know, sentence as all these great guitar greats, including Carlos.
And does the music of Ecuador play into what you're doing, or is that just your deep roots for you?
Oh, those deep roots are on some of the albums. You could find them. Like there's a pasillo. My mother's a composer, so she wrote pasillos and had records out in Ecuador. My father, great actor. So there's a couple of her songs that I've reworked on my solo records. Como un sueño, it's a traditional pasillo rhythm, and another one of her songs that has like tango elements. So I did hear all that growing up, so it's second nature, those rhythms, and there's elements of that on my albums, which is so exciting.
So when you listen to Latin music, and I think folks who are approaching it from, you know, far outside the tradition, there's the music of Cuba in some ways is so different from the music of Puerto Rico, and certainly, you know, music in Spanish from Europe and so forth. Is there one thing that ties it together besides the language itself?
Well, to me, it's the groove of it, like and that's a big part of my sound that would distinguish me from a traditional rock artist, is that I will have a lot of hand percussion blended with rock drums or funk drums or whatever. So the grooves that are around in the Caribbean music, like the Afro-Cuban or the Puerto Ricano, the, you know, bomba y plena or even rumba flamenco, those kind of rhythms, and even, you know, clearly from Africa too, and that's what comes into play in the Jamaican sound. That's very different than, you know, straight for rock, you know, or hip hop.
And what is it?
That's one of my big part of my sound.
Uh huh. What is it that led you to do a reggae album at this point in your career?
Again, it was like, you know, the new stuff I was starting to write for my what would become my fourth album was just coming out as reggae, and I was really, I'm really kind of perturbed. I'm like, you know, in protest head because of the amoral behavior of people in power and the corruption and the hatred and all that, and I feel like I need to speak out. And so a song like Resiste is what was born, and then that's when, you know, I guess reggae is well suited for pulling us together, uniting us, and it's just traditionally been how people spoke out, like Bob Marley, who I admire so much, or the Toots and the Maytals, like when you think about what they've done. And so they really inspired me. And then when I was talking to them again with my label, they were like, oh, you wrote another reggae song. And they said, why don't we put them all together? I have my song Bang Bang that is an anti-gun violence song. And So I think it was as much the social message as much as the rhythm part, and the history of reggae music being that kind of having that kind of that heart, you know, that helps us during troubled times, you know.
So what can the folks in Troy expect when they hear you performing at Freedom Square on Tuesday?
Well, I'm so excited to perform at Freedom Square. First of all, sharing the stage with Diana Asili is a thrill, because I have to say, it's rare for there to be two women on the same bill. So I'm thrilled about that. And I've heard her music and it sounds great. What we're going to do for what we're doing in this tour is really trying to get a whole trajectory, a little journey to take people on of a concert, you know, mostly in Spanish, a lot of different rhythms you're going to hear. We're definitely going to highlight some of the reggae stuff from the new album, and hopefully, you know, take you from very soft acoustic to really loud rock and concert, I hope.
Awesome. Well, we're looking forward to seeing you in person.
We're thrilled. We love bringing these songs to life and offering them to such a great community for such a great purpose. I love the whole messaging around Spirit of the Suffragettes music series, and just the word sanctuary for independent media just touches my soul. So I appreciate that. Mi alma. ¿Me entiendes? I really appreciate it.
Great. Anything you want to add?
Just sending a shout out to everybody, and hopefully they can join us. It's a free concert, and Freedom Square is where we'll be on August 20th. So hope to meet a lot of great people.
That was El Huri. El Huri is performing this week's Spirit of the Suffragettes concert series alongside Taina Asili. Next up is an interview with WMHT's Cherokee Grimes discussing the need for maternal health. Cherokee, what kind of issues of today do you think parallel the suffragette movement?
Well, thank you for inviting me. I think that one of the big issues is birth justice, and currently I am 6 months pregnant. Mm-hmm. I just started a new job at WMHT, and because I started a new job, I won't be able to take the New York State Paid Family Leave Act, which pays for about half of your salary mm-hmm. while you're on leave. So my maternity leave is now sort of something I have to think about. How I'm going to be able to do the things that I normally do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like trying to balance work and family is, I can imagine, hard.
Yeah, so one option is the Disability Act, which it pays only about $170 per week. Mm-hmm. And so for a mother living in today's modern society, mm-hmm. it's very difficult to take care of a child or even yourself on that.
I don't think that doesn't sound like it's enough to take care of a kid.
No.
Or even yourself.
So luckily for me, I have a partner who will be supporting me. Mm-hmm. But in this time, I'm thinking about women who are maybe single mothers or mm-hmm. who don't have other resources, family or friends who can help them, and mm-hmm. how difficult it would be to take care of themselves and their babies.
Yeah, definitely. So you advocate for single mothers sort of thing?
Yeah, yeah. Definitely.
Yeah. What drives your passions about
so,
that?
Currently, it's because of my current yeah. situation, but I think just supporting and empowering women in our community mm-hmm. is really important, and knowing that not all women have the same opportunities that maybe I mm-hmm. have or that other women have.
Yeah, definitely. What historical figure can you think of that inspires you in the work you do?
So one historical figure that really inspires me is Nina Simone. Mm-hmm. She's not completely directly related to the work that I'm currently doing, but I'm really inspired by her ability to just tell her story mm-hmm. and be herself
yeah.
as she was throughout her whole life, through her music and yeah. and I also play piano, so I aspire to be like her. I'm not as good as Nina Simone, but
yeah. Like, what kind? Do you know what kind of work she did?
So she did a lot of work through her music, through her lyrics in the civil rights movement, and you can see sort of a progression in her music and becoming more of an activist.
Mm. Yeah, that's I love when musicians mix activism with their music.
Yeah,
yeah.
It's good when you can use something that you're passionate about to do good.
Yeah, a platform.
Mm-hmm.
How would you say our social rights movements have changed in relation to the suffragette movement?
So a lot of things haven't changed, unfortunately. I think that media is a big influence in how it has changed with we see with the Me Too movement, that becoming really big on social media and other online channels. And I think that that's something that was a little difficult for the suffragettes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Not having that method of communication.
Mm-hmm. It definitely, with addition of social media, it definitely opened the floodgates of like so much more voices being heard.
Definitely.
Versus just white women being heard.
That's true. That's another good point.
For those just tuning in, I'm speaking with Cherokee, the Community Engagement Coordinator from WMHT, in honor of the Suffragette, Spirit of the Suffragette Festival that's taking place this summer. What qualities would you say a person needs in order to be considered a modern-day suffragette?
I think that they have to have a goal. Because I think without a goal, you're not as driven to accomplish something specific. And I think that they would just need to have the passion. We know that not all the suffragettes received the support they needed, but they kept moving on towards their goal. Mm. And I think that's kind of the same definition that we can adopt today.
Yeah. Definitely. It's definitely needed to have passion.
Yeah.
Would you consider yourself a modern suffragette?
I think I would have some more work to do to consider myself a modern day suffragette, but it's definitely something to aspire to.
Mm-hmm.
I definitely have goals for women and thinking about mothers in particular, but I think I could be doing more work towards that goal.
Yeah. If you were to nominate someone as a suffragette, who would you nominate and why?
So on my way to and from work, I'm always listening to podcasts, and I really love listening to different shows, but Jenna Wortham, who is a culture writer at the New York Times, is someone who I would nominate because she just has this fire and passion and is really focused on specifically lifting up Black women or women of color and non-binary women, and thinking about her position at the New York Times and how she's using that as, like you said, a platform is also really inspiring.
Yeah, that's so important. I love that.
Yeah.
Can you think of anyone you know personally who could be a suffragette in your eyes?
I would say one of my best friends. Her name is Summer. She actually reminds me a lot of Jenna Wortham. But she works towards women's rights, specifically reproductive rights. And so everything that she does is really geared towards that goal.
That was Cherokee Grimes, Community Engagement Coordinator for WMHT. Now listen to an interview from Enrique Johnson, speaking to one of the tablers for the Spirit of the Suffragettes Resource Fair, K. Michelle Doyle from Local Care Midwifery, who shares her experiences as well as the advantages and misconceptions around the field.
My name is Enrique Johnson, and this week I'm speaking with K. Michelle Doyle, the owner of Local Care Midwifery, based here in Troy. Local Care Midwifery will have a table at the upcoming Women's Resource Fair and Summer Festival, and she's taking time out of her day to discuss herself and her practice. Welcome.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
just to start off with, I think a good place is, how would you describe the role of a midwife, and how does a midwife fit into the childbirth process?
So a midwife in New York State is a licensed women's healthcare provider. So yes, I attend births. And yes, like most people assume in this area, that midwives only attend births and only attend births at home. And that's one part of what midwives can do. The majority of licensed midwives in the United States and in New York State, actually, if they attend births, attend them at hospitals. I have both home birth practice and hospital. But we also do much more than that. We take care of women's health care, period. Women's health care, period. And people just don't get that. So even when I say it, then they go back to right to birth. I'm like, yes. And I take care of 8-year-old little girls that have questions about how their body's developing. And they know their mom comes to me for those kind of things. So they're like, why would you take me to my pediatrician? They say to their mom, you should take me to Michelle. And I take care of 95-year-old women that, you know, really prefer to come to me for their annual exams than their primary care. So women's health care is providers are what midwives do. And we get the really great work of being able to attend people during pregnancy and childbirth as well.
Outside of what you already discussed, are there any other common misconceptions about a midwife that you'd like to shoot down right here?
Sure. Thank you. that we're not educated. A lot of people assume that midwives just kind of pick it up as a hobby. To be a licensed midwife in New York State, you have to have a master's level education. You don't necessarily have to have a nursing background. I do, so I'm a certified nurse midwife, but you have to have master's level education. You go to midwifery school where you learn physiology and anatomy and pathophysiology and, you know, how to prescribe for medications. It's a lot.
In sort of researching for this, I saw that particularly internationally, people are making the case for making midwife education more available because they see it as a way to improve health for women and children across the world. Now, you particularly have an extensive list of certifications and training. So I did want to get into your educational background specifically. Now, you indicated that a master's level education is required. If you could describe the program that you're in. Now, I understand that you, as you said, you deal with anatomy, etc. Was there a particular major or something like that that you had to focus on, or was there a particular set of classes?
So I did it all backwards. There's a much more straightforward way to get a midwifery education than what I did. I did 2 bachelors, because why just get one? 2 bachelors, one in anthropology and one in environmental science, and then got down with the business of going to midwifery school, which meant I had to take all the prerequisites to get into nursing school and then finish nursing school and go to midwifery school. It's a much more straightforward path to just say, I'm getting my bachelor's, I'm going to have it science heavy, and then I'm going to go straight into midwifery school. But that's not what I did. My school at the time was called Frontier School of Midwifery and Family Nursing. They've now become a university, so it's Frontier University. Frontier Nursing University, and they educate both nurse midwives and nurse practitioners, both.
As you described your background, that's kind of a taking the long way towards getting there. Now, in your case, was there a person or event that inspired you to take this path?
I'd known that I wanted to be a midwife since I was a very, very tiny child, probably about 3 or 4 years old. I was walking past the dining room table. I was about the height of the dining room table, so I must have been 3 or 4, and somebody had just read us, a babysitter had just read us a book that had a midwife as a character, and I remember thinking to myself, midwife, that's what I am. I'm a midwife. And then went on that path from that day forward and felt very strongly, I was a very intense child, very intense, that it was really, it would be really important to me if I was going to be a midwife to have a very well-rounded education. So I wanted to study anthropology and sociology and have a really deep understanding of people, not just go straight into the sciences. So that's what I did. It means I spent a lot of time in school.
Well, do you feel that it wound up helping you?
Absolutely. I'm really happy with all the education I had, that I've got so much background in anthropology, sociology, and the arts. It's really helpful for cultural diversity, which is huge. I was a midwife in the Troy hospitals here for 10 years, and you've walked on the Troy streets. You know what kind of diversity we have here. Mm-hmm. We have, because of RPI, we have people from all over the world here. We have people that are literally living on the streets. We have people that have incredible bank accounts that I can even hardly imagine how many figures they have in their bank accounts. So huge diversity, socially, economically, religious. You know, I saw women in full burqas in downtown Troy yesterday with, you know, the only thing that was visible was their shoes, fingers, not even their whole hands, and eyes. So we have incredible diversity here. And I think that it's really important as a healthcare provider to have some sense of what's going on behind all that diversity rather than just being able to put labels on it. And my education in liberal sciences, I think, was very helpful for that.
Now, in sort of looking over your website, I noticed that you mentioned that you attended over 1,200 births.
Yes.
Which is a lot of life to have touched. Inside or outside your practice, is there a particular person or a situation that you found particularly inspiring?
My own midwife, the midwife that actually attended my pregnancies and births and then that I worked with, so she was my mentor. Vicki Wolfram is still to this day the person that really, she's one of those voices in my head mm-hmm. when I'm trying to work through a situation, especially if I'm taking care of somebody. I'm like, well, what would Vicki do? So Vicki Wolfram was definitely that person.
Well, what did you find inspiring about her in particular?
Vicki is a very different person for me. She's very extroverted, whereas I can put on a good face, but really at my core, I'm an introvert. I would rather be in my house with a book and just my husband, maybe.
Maybe.
That's my idea of a perfect evening. Whereas at Vicki's house, there were always people running around, and there was always a radio and a television and lots of noise and chaos. And to watch her come into a labor. So I was the assistant in the practice, so I would often be at the house before Vicki walked in. And labor tends to work better for people, for most people. This is an exaggeration, but for most people, that if it's very cave-like and very quiet and very private, mm-hmm. and Vicki, with all this chaotic energy in her life, it could just watch her come up to the front door of the house where somebody was laboring, and it would just drop. It would just fall away from her, like taking a coat off, and then she'd walk in the door and just be calm and serene. And to be able to change like that on a dime and face the situation that was in front of you was very impressive.
What are some of the benefits that women see from choosing a midwife, be they emotional or physical?
So statistically, midwife attended birth, whether it be at home or hospital, is associated with decreased prematurity and increased satisfaction for the woman giving birth, and increased breastfeeding rates up to, certainly at 6 weeks, but up to a year. So some long-term health benefits with the baby too. Then other studies will show other things, but those three seem to be across study after study after study. And I've seen a lot of people who said, well, that decrease in prematurity rate, that doesn't even make sense. How would that make? And I think how it makes sense is that midwives tend to be very good, whether they're hospital-based midwives with very busy practices or home birth or birth center-based midwives. But midwives tend to be very good, like Vicki was, at dropping at the door, of slowing down time and just talking to the person in front of them. So I think a lot of times what we do is hear, wow, your stress level is really high. Let's make a plan for this, because we don't want you to wind up having your baby 3 months early. So what can we do to get supports in place for you? And so that is my guess on why study after study, low prematurity rates are associated with midwifery care.
Do you find that you spend a lot of your time with the emotional aspect?
Oh, yeah.
As opposed to just dealing with the physical?
Yeah.
Because theoretically, they could just go to an OBGYN, get drugs and equipment and so forth.
When I was at Seton in a hospital-based practice, Dr. Parsley was one of the physicians there. And he would, at that practice, you could choose midwife or doctor. And so some people would choose the doctor. And he just finally just started saying to people, why are you seeing me? Why don't you see the midwives? They do the same thing. They do the same thing for you, and they're nicer.
In the spirit of the women's suffrage movement, as you are going to be present at the festival, do you feel there's a connection between your work and the current women's rights movement?
Well, yeah. Being able to talk with women and meet them where they're at is really important. And having them know what their rights and their responsibilities are by having a body and living in this day and age is also really important.
Before we leave today, if people are interested in hearing more from you and learning more about your practice, how can they get in touch with you?
First thing would be to look at the website, localcaremidwifery.com. Also, you can give us a call. The phone number is 518-238-3469. You'll talk to Loring, my office manager, and she'll be happy to make an appointment for you.
Well, I do want to thank you again for being here today with us. For more information on the festival, please visit mediasanctuary.org and be sure to save the dates for our summer festival. The festival and resource fair will be at Freedom Square in North Troy every Tuesday from 5 p.m. to 8 p.m. from July 16th through August 20th. And the festival will close with the 9th annual Story Harvest celebration on September 21st. You can see who will be performing at the festival at mediasanctuary.org. Thank you for listening.
That was Enrique Johnson with K. Michelle Doyle from Local Care Midwifery. Up next is another performer from this week's Spirit of the Suffragettes, Taina Asili, interviewed by the Sanctuary Volunteer Coordinator, Laquina Elias.
Welcome back to the Sanctuary for Independent Media.
Hello, thank you. Thanks for having me.
Oh, of course. So we're looking forward to your show on Tuesday. How are you feeling about it?
I'm excited. I'm so excited. I was here last for the release of my new album, and that was in, I want to say it was in April. No, it was March 29th, my birthday.
Oh, wow.
I released a new album. It's called Resiliencia, and this space is so important to me, and I wanted to release my album here in this space. So I had my album release here, and I've been traveling with it, touring all over the nation, and I'm excited to be back in my hometown again to share this new music with my community.
And we're excited to have you back here. So can you tell us a little bit about your traveling experiences with your new album?
Yeah. Well, I just got back from Oregon. I was in Oregon performing at a festival called Beloved, and it was super beautiful. I don't know if you remember the group Diggable Planets. Do you remember them?
I do not.
They're like, cool like that. I'm cool like that.
Oh, I do. I'm cool like I know that. That song.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah. I have to say that. So they performed. They headlined the night, wow, which was awesome. And we had a number of really amazing artists. I also got a chance to guest perform with my friends in a group called Climbing Poetry, who performed here at the Suffragette Series earlier this summer. And I've been doing a lot of performances. Like I performed at Carnegie Hall with Toshi Regan, and that was like pretty much a dream come true. I also performed with her in New York City at an event, and just a lot of festivals and beautiful summertime outdoor concerts, which is just like super healing to my heart.
That's beautiful. So Carnegie Hall, What was going through your mind? How are you feeling? Dream come true. Tell us about that dream.
Oh gosh. It was part of a bigger event, a series about migration that they had at Carnegie. And so the gift for me was that not only did I get to sing one of my own songs, so I sang a song called Sofrito, which is off of my second album, but I also had the opportunity to sing a song that was composed by students, by young people, that were telling their stories of migration. So they were talking about migrating here from the Dominican Republic and what that experience was like. And they let me have that song and recreate it into a song that I would perform professionally on the stage. So that was like a tremendous gift to be able to sing in their voice. And I also got a chance to perform with other incredible artists, Toshi Regan, who's like incredible, Liz Wright and Bea Steadwell and Martha Redbone and all these other amazing artists, and just connect. You know, it was a really beautiful time, and it was a sold out show. So it was like full audience of people really excited to see us.
That sounds really amazing. And When was this? How recent?
Oh, gosh. I don't know if it was in May. maybe, I think it was in May. it's all becoming a blur to me now, like all the dates, because it's been a busy, late spring to summer time period.
Well, that's wonderful. That's wonderful. And you've also been to some film festivals.
Is that true? Yeah. So I released a music video documentary as a part of the album. I've been releasing a series of music video documentaries. The one that has been doing really well in the film festival circuit is a film called Plant the Seed, which is about, it's a documentary about my best friend, Leah Penniman of Soulfire Farm, and her journey to become the amazing Black food justice farmer and educator that she is today. And it's been, making its way at various film festivals. And most recently, I was in Philadelphia, where it screened at the Black Star Film Festival, which was unbelievable. Like, it was just like, wow. So incredible. Like, films that were by like Questlove and Black Thought. Spike Lee was there. Toronto Burke was there.
Great company.
I mean, it was an amazing company. So, and Maiori Carmel herself, who's the founder of the festival, had her music video for India RE in the same session that I was in. So we got to answer questions together. And yeah, it was just like, really, really new world. It's a new world for me. Like, I'm new to filmmaking. I've done music videos. My first music video that I directed was in 2010, I want to say. And then I've done three more since then, and then two of these documentaries. So I'm still, like, in the film world, relatively new. And I think sometimes when we don't go to school for something, you know, like, we can get a little bit of like imposter syndrome. So this, going to these film festivals and being able to see my film screened with others and be like, oh, maybe I actually got some talent here.
Absolutely.
Like,
you belong there.
Yeah, it was really affirming. It's been really affirming. So.
So you plan to do more films in the future?
Yeah. So I'm working on two more currently. I have in the middle of editing. And they're going to be coming out shortly. I was hoping they were going to come out sooner than they did, but, such is the life of an artist / mother / a million activists and a million other things.
So many hats.
Yeah. Oh, shout out to Katani and the How Many Hats I Wear. But yeah, so, I do plan to be releasing more. Look out for them soon. And they'll all be related to my new album, which is called Resiliencia, which is means resilience. And it's basically an album where I interviewed women of color about their stories of resilience and then created compositions based on their stories. So a good portion of those women are right here in the Capital Region. And next week, you'll be able to hear me singing to them and for them and lifting up their stories and their voices in my songs at the Freedom Square.
Amazing. I can't wait to hear you. I can't wait to see you. And if you're all interested in visiting the Sanctuary of Independent Media, we'll be having the Spirit of the Suffragettes concert Tuesday, August 20th from 5 to 8 p.m. You'll get to see Taina. It'll be a wonderful experience. And we hope to see you all there. And Taina, thank you so much for coming in and speaking with me and just having this wonderful interview. I appreciate it so much.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
That was Taina Sili, who performed alongside El Yuri this week. And that concludes tonight's show. I hope you've enjoyed this special episode of the Hudson Mohawk Magazine. My name is Cassidy Faye McCabe. Remember to tune back in tomorrow and every weekday at 7 a.m., 9 a.m., and 6 p.m. to get your daily dose of local news. You can also get that dose through our Hudson Mohawk Magazine podcast and Facebook page. If you have comments, suggestions, or a tender confession, email us at hmm@mediasanctuary.org. Also, be sure to tune in 7 to 10 weeknights for Jazz Sanctuary, a wonderful celebration of all that is creative, dedicated to supporting jazz in the Hudson Mohawk region. And if you're free to, join us in celebrating 102 years of women being able to vote in New York State and 99 years across the country. The Spirit of the Suffragettes showcases women, non-binary, and gender non-conforming musicians from the international and local spheres of Troy, New York. This week, we had performances from El Yuri and Taina Silly, but you can join us on Saturday, September 21st from 3 to 6 p.m. for the Story Harvest Celebration and Spirit of the Suffragettes Closer. Performing that night will be Tocotello and Katani. As a reminder, the Hudson Mohawk Magazine is produced by local volunteers. If you're interested in volunteering with our radio effort, please shoot us an email at info@mediasanctuary.org. Or just stop by one of our weekly meetings on Monday nights at 7:07 p.m., held right here at the Sanctuary for Independent Media. Until next time, folks, thanks for tuning in.